Everybody, it's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 192 of Two Black Nerds. That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and hot takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that love, y'all. And let's not forget to mention, we have brand new merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Two Black Jedi and Sith collections inspired by Star Wars. We got t-shirts, crew neck city stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing episode 3 of the Marvel Studios original series, Secret Invasion. We'll have a spoiler-filled conversation about this week's big moments, address the lingering questions from the episode, and share our thoughts on how we're feeling at the halfway point of the series. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this podcast with our general big picture thoughts on the latest installment of the series. And so last week we kicked off sort of our weekly reviews of this new series, Secret Invasion. We recapped and reviewed the first two episodes. I think we were both of the mindset that the first episode was a little slow out of the gate. It was sort of setting the table for what the series is going to be. But then episode two definitely shined a bigger and I would say better light on just what the series was about, what some of the background key things were happening in terms of the story, and then also just further fleshing out the relationships between Nick Fury and the supporting cast, because this is obviously primarily about his character and just all the things that he's experienced with the Skrulls up until this point within the MCU. So before we dive into spoilers, before we talk about the specifics with episode 3, just want to start off with your general big picture thoughts about the latest installment of the show. What did you think about episode 3 of Secret Invasion?
Yeah, episode 3 for me mostly carries over a decent amount of that energy, I think, that I did like about episode 2, but it's getting scarier as we're halfway through the show for me, as I still feel that looming presence of a end of MCU show, end of Marvel project coming, because they just keep dropping these little tidbits of what feels like this conclusion that feels like something all too familiar that we've known before. And so it's a good episode for me. I still like it, but I can't move it up. I can't like it more because of that looming presence of that. And it's really weird and sad that I have to say that. But it is what it is, man. And I think my hope is that it'll subvert expectations and maybe they don't end up falling into this formula that Marvel is known for. But man, I can't shake it because of everything they're giving us right now. What I will say is that, again, I do like this episode. I love the character moments we get in this TV show, man. The acting is just so good. And they really are doing great work on the acting side. Not only that, but I think that paranoia is turning up a little bit versus what we felt before. We were like, we don't know how paranoid we feel, because Secret Invasion is supposed to feel, you know, that stakes supposed to feel a little bit higher. And I think this episode does do a decent job of getting us to a moment where the stakes are high in so on and so forth. But man, I find myself also questioning just a couple things when it comes to I think the way things feel, the way I feel like they're not leaning all the way into the spy espionage that I need them to lean into sometimes. And also I feel like that we could be making cooler choices when it comes to the visual aspect of the TV show, because Secret Invasion and the Skrulls is such a, I don't know, I think a cool concept when it comes to being able to, anybody can shapeshift. I remember rewatching part of episode 2 with my mom. My mom was like, she's seen one of the Skrulls change. She was like, oh, this is a trip. I was like, you're right, mom. It is a trip. But imagine I think if some of the cinematography and the camera work were was also doing some of that work to be like, oh, you don't know who's who, you know? And I think they're missing an opportunity when it comes to that aspect as well. But overall, I still enjoyed the episode a lot. Like I said, the character moments I really like. I really like how scary Gravik is kind of feeling still and how childish he feels as well in this episode. But it's that looming presence, man, that I can't shake. But we'll see what happens in these next couple episodes.
Yeah, it's already crazy that we are at the halfway point of the series. It certainly doesn't feel like it. It feels like we just started practically because we kind of just did just a few weeks ago. But now at this particular phase of where we are with Secret Invasion, I'm also a little weary of just the status of the show. Coming into Secret Invasion, just leading up until the release of the series, I was very much excited about it because of the potential that exists there with the comic book storyline and how they could translate that to live action, but also just due to the tonality of the show, certainly leans into things that I very much am attracted to when it comes to storytelling, a little bit more of a darker, more mature story out of the MCU. And it's tapping into that, but I don't feel that the creators and the story that we are telling is fully tapping into that in the ways that I would like. It certainly has its flashes and its moments. We've obviously sort of raved about many of the conversations that took place in episode 2 in particular, and that started to really skew towards that more mature, more sophisticated conversational pieces and character development moments between particular story arcs that I was really, really attracted to. But coming into this week, some of that was sacrificed for a little bit more of the, I guess, spectacle that we come to associate with the MCU. Mm-hmm. Some of the more, I guess for lack of a better term, nonsensical stuff that I just don't really care about that we'll get into when we talk spoilers. But there were a few moments where I'm like, okay, we are still leaning into those conversations that really go behind the scenes of who our characters are and why they became the way that they are and just all of the choices that they made and how that has influenced and shaped their lives. Like, all of that stuff is still bubbling underneath the surface. I just wish we could really dive in head first at times to really just like unlock all of that stuff and really activate what some of those things really might mean and sort of have implications for in terms of the larger story. Because oftentimes with these series from the MCU, just due to the nature of the structure and the fact that we only have 6 episodes, it just feels so restricted at times. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, man, there's so much runway here in terms of what you can use and where you can go with the story. And if you just provided yourself a little bit more runway, I wouldn't have any doubt that we could eventually get there, yeah. But knowing the fact that we only have less than 3 hours likely with this series, there's certainly going to be some lingering things that are just kind of left unchecked or unsaid, and that's a little unfortunate. So I'm so-so on this episode. I don't think it's as good as episode 2. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much kind of on par with episode 1 for me, save for one conversation that I really liked in this particular episode that definitely reminded me of some of those conversational pieces again that we saw in episode 2. So it was fine. I think overall with the series as well, I'm just kind of fine on it. It's cool. It's not the worst that they've done, and it still has the potential to be the best if the next 3 are just like absolute bangers. Like, it could get there, but I think just looking at the track record of where the MCU has been with television, my expectations don't necessarily lie in that particular area of it. I think it's probably going to end off in sort of a middle of the pack road, you know, in terms of their series. But we'll see. But with that out of the way, let's dive into spoilers. Let's talk about the details of this week's episode. So if you've not seen episode 3 of Secret Invasion, go watch that and come back and finish out the rest of our conversation. So coming into episode 3, I think the big question that we were left off of from last week's episode, episode 2, was, did Nick Fury know that his wife was a Skrull or not? Because we saw at the end of episode 2 that she is indeed a Skrull. We know that she is also the one that introduced Fury to Gravik when he was just a young child. But the way that they set up the shot and the way that it played out at the end of episode 2, we just didn't necessarily know whether or not he was privy to the information of her being a Skrull. I think that they left it intentionally ambiguous. But now coming into episode 3, it became pretty clear that he does indeed know that she is a Skrull. In fact, we do get a flashback sequence, another flashback sequence that takes us back to 1998, which essentially sort of reveals that Nick Fury knows that she's a Skrull and she's presenting herself as a black woman on Earth. And then we fast forward to present day and we see a conversation between Priscilla, his wife, and Nick Fury. And essentially she's kind of telling him very similar information that we've heard from other characters like Maria Hill, like Sonya Fallsworth in the first 2 episodes, that you've been gone, you haven't been around, the blip changed you. And most notably with Priscilla, because she is his wife and they obviously love each other, she was the most affected and the most hurt by that. And she's telling Fury, hey, what did you expect me to do while you were gone? I was just left here by myself. We didn't really have that much contact and communication. And in that time that you've been gone, I've become sort of a different person. I've sort of realized and found who I needed to be within that time frame of you disappearing and essentially living in space all those years. And so I think we start to see the sowing of those seeds between the tension that might exist between Priscilla and Fury. And there's also that subtle moment in that earlier conversation where she gets a phone call. She doesn't take it. He looks at it like, hey, do you need to take that? What's going on? And she's like, I'm good. So you can start to see that there's some tension there. What did you think about just like that whole sequence in how it played out? The fact that Fury knows he's married to a Skrull. He's very much willing to be a part of this relationship. But then also just the effects that his absence over those past few years has taken on his wife, Priscilla.
Yeah, I really like that concept that she became a different person while he was gone, because what else is there to do? You know, she says, he asks, I'm trying to figure out who you became while I was gone. She's like, I became a widow. What are you saying? You're not around. I had to learn to grieve you. I cried on your pillow. And I think that really does something to a person. Not only is Nick Fury her one attachment, you know, kind of to this earth in a lot of ways, you know, but he left. And now she's kind of really a fish out of water. She's a Skrull out of water. And especially you don't know at that point what she's been doing in those years, because I'm sure she sought out other Skrulls, right? And so that's what makes, I think, this whole thing so interesting, because now it's like, who is this woman and what are her intentions? You know, we see a lot of weird messiness with Priscilla going on. And I think one of my favorite details is, you know, the whole idea that villains can't use iPhones.
Yep.
And Priscilla used this like weird ass flip phone looking thing. I don't know what it was. I was like, I've never seen this phone before. And not that necessarily she's a villain, right? Other people have used other phones that are iPhones in media. But now it's like, it's raising questions. Now you have to say, okay, what really legit happened, which is what Nick Fury is trying to ask her in this time period. And even when he asks her, did you have any contact with Gravik? She doesn't answer the question, which is very interesting, because I'm sure Nick Fury is great at catching lies. I'm sure he knows exactly when somebody is lying. And she does a good job avoiding the question. And so it's everything with Priscilla is becoming, I think, is an interesting talking point. Is an interesting thing to start to bring up in the show that we kind of knew when she popped up it was going to be interesting, but it is a little more intricate than I thought it would be. I was like, oh, this is actually going somewhere else than I thought it was going. So I appreciate the things they're doing with Priscilla here. And I think, I think we're headed in the right direction with her. Again, unfortunately, there's not a ton of time left. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we could be doing more with her character and all of this, but I know we're just not going to get it to the level that we need to get it. But I think there's some really good stuff going on here. One other cool detail, I like how she ages herself up with Nick Fury, because she could just be young the whole time if she really wanted
forever
to.
Young.
Yeah, yep. And she's like, she tries to match her husband. So I think that's a really cool small detail too. But yeah, I like the messiness they got on with her, but we'll see where it goes from here.
Certainly. I think that her appearance in this episode, well, really at the end of episode two, now leading into this week, sort of signaled that she has a pretty major part in this. And they teased that with the flashback of her introducing young Gravik to Fury. But I think now seeing that come to fruition and seeing, again, another person who was just significantly impacted by the absence of this really, really important man. And that continues to be kind of a constant theme, that his departure from Earth after the blip was definitely, I think, more significant than anybody necessarily as an audience goer necessarily might have assumed to begin with. Like when you see that post-credit scene in Spider-Man Far From Home, again, it's played for laughs. He's up in space with his shoes off chilling. I don't think anybody necessarily sat back and thought like, wow, you know, everybody in Fury's life is pretty much going to be pissed at him because he just wasn't around. But it makes a lot of sense just within the context of who he initially was on his ascent to power, on his ascent to becoming director of S.H.I.E.L.D., where he was always active, always around, and certainly ambitious to a degree in which he started to sacrifice other people to now just vanishing and going away because he was fearful, because he didn't have any answers. He didn't necessarily know how to address the really intergalactic threats that he was facing. And so now to just see all of these individuals who played really, really important key characters in his life, just start to look at him funny and say like, bro, what the hell? Like, you can't just come back and think you're just going to fall back in the way of things and think it's just going to be sweet. While you were gone, I've also changed as a person. I had to adjust and adapt and make choices that probably were super difficult for me as well. And I think in that time frame, Priscilla in particular has had her loyalty tested because she also had a relationship with Gravik since he was a young little boy. Mm-hmm. And who knows what that manifested into in the years that Fury was absent, because I think what we're starting to see here with the Gravik storyline and how it connects to Fury is that this goes a lot deeper than just Gravik wanting to deliver on a promise that Fury didn't deliver upon himself. I think it goes a lot further than that. And we know that Gravik has other parents. We know that his actual parents were killed, and so he was sort of orphaned as a young boy. But Priscilla seemingly took him in to a certain extent at a young age and put him underneath the wing of Fury. What do you think about the possible connections that might exist there? I think that there's still a lot to tell. Yeah. There's still a lot to see. But is it at all possible that Gravik maybe became sort of an adoptive child for Priscilla and Fury? Maybe at a particular time, he actually lived with them and they raised him and they took care of them. And that's why he has such a personal vendetta against Fury. And that's why he's very much like taking this out on him in really meaningful ways and not just like wanting to conceive of a world domination takeover threat. He's actually like going after these people that are very closely connected to Fury.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know, that you say that. And especially, I feel like he has to know Fury deep enough to also know how his pressure points in which would hurt him. He has to know what Maria Hill meant to him. You know what I'm saying? He has to know what all of these other people mean to him. And so I think that's a good idea that Priscilla and Gravik and Fury do have this relationship, either mentorship or a patriarchal relationship to Gravik. Because how else or why else would he feel like this? I don't know. There's still one cool thing that Ben Benadir is doing here is he does seem formidable, but there's still like this small amount of childishness that comes with him that you can feel in his scenes and even when he's doing things. It's like, this is a dude who's just trying to, I don't know, kind of express himself in the craziest ways. And I think he is going after Fury in that way, kind of like a more like a rebellious teen than anything. And I think they try to make that very apparent too when Talos is talking about we age slower. You know what I mean? And in my mind, it's like, he may look older, Kingsley Benadir may look older, but maybe he is maturing slower. He really is. This is like a teenage rebellious kind of thing going on. And I do love those connections though, because now the question is has Priscilla been helping him? And in what capacity, if he has been helping him? Or have they been close the whole time? And now even maybe at some point she's going to try to slow him down. I don't know. There's a lot of ways I think they can go with this. But I do really like this idea of this rebellious teen, kind of rebellion against at least one parent, and specifically the parent that went missing. You know, MCU all about daddy issues. So you telling me he already lost his parents once before, but now feeling like he did lose somebody in Nick Fury who couldn't follow up on the promise that he gave him. It does feel like there's more layers to it. And I really like that aspect. I think there's something there.
Because, you know, what's also really interesting about that is that Gravik as a young child, having such a traumatic incident happen to him and having to rely on his own cunning and resourcefulness to get out of a really sticky situation, if he were to be taken under the wing of Priscilla and Fury and for a time was raised by them even perhaps, then at what point did he walk down the wrong path? Because you would imagine that those two people are probably more positive influences in his life. Yeah. Probably. Fury, I think we could take that for a grain of salt, because who's to even say he was around to even, you know, be a caring parent if he was in his life in that way. But I think we would have to imagine that some force in his life came along that would steer him down a really destructive path, because he already has a lot of anger and resentment built up as a young child because of the parents that he lost, his actual parents. And so for him to direct that in the ways that he's directing it now and steering it in a really sort of unmaturated way, sort of as to what you spoke to, I think has to come from a place of anger and a place of somebody taking those feelings and actually saying like, oh no, actually we need to fight back and take revenge essentially and actually step on people in order to achieve what we need to do. So this is bigger than just a rebellion. It also becomes very personal. Is Priscilla maybe that avatar for Gravik? I don't know. But it also is like a weird conundrum because Priscilla really does seem like she loves Fury. Like she's been here. Yeah. She's still in the house, even though she had to live without him for all these years. And we see that she's still willing to conform herself to make him feel comfortable when she changes her form. Exactly. So there's obviously still something there. And I think that that makes this really, really compelling stuff where we're starting to see the potential, I guess the potential family drama take shape if it is indeed a more personal, familial relationship between Gravik, Priscilla, and Fury. We'll have to see, you know, ultimately what that comes to be. But I would love if they maybe went down that route to maybe explore what that looks like for Gravik and how he ultimately decided to go down the path that he decided to go down. But speaking of Gravik and just like his whole machinations, we're starting to see that rebellious plot continue to take shape throughout this week. And we saw in the previous episode that him and his faction of Skrulls were able to secure DNA from a variety of different alien species all throughout the MCU, one of them being Extremis. And this week we found out that Gravik actually has Extremis within him. We haven't seen Extremis in a bit. There was like a random guard in Shang-Chi in The Legend of the Ten Rings. I remember when they went to the underground fight ring that had the Extremis gene, but it hasn't been a major factor since Iron Man 3. But who's to say that Extremis isn't just like out there living amongst maybe hundreds of individuals? And I think that's, you know, sort of the point that they alluded to in Shang-Chi, that people could just be living with this. So now he's become even more powerful. But we're also seeing that dynamic of Gravik influence another relationship in particular, and that's a relationship of Gaia and Talos. Talos is the father of Gaia. Gaia, we have started to learn, is acting as sort of a double agent amongst all of these different forces that are at play. Gravik and Talos decide to have a parlay and a meeting to discuss everything that's happening here. And we see eventually it breaks down because at the slightest mention of Talos' daughter Gaia, he loses it. He snaps. We see that is not something he plays around with. Yeah. And so at the instance that Gravik decides to threaten Gaia or even hint at threatening her, Talos is not having it. He's not trying to hear that shit. He takes a knife and stabs him in the arm with it. He chokes him. He threatens him. Like, you say my daughter's name anymore, it's going to be the end of you. And he's just not fearful at all. And I think it even comes back later in the episode with the whole submarine plot when the commander or whoever it was, I can't even remember his name, mentions Gaia's name and Talos just kills him. So we're just saying that is a huge pressure point for him, that is not something you can play around with. What do you think about Talos and just like his ability or I guess his non-ability to deal with people mentioning his daughter and how sensitive he is to that, the fact that he's willing to become very deadly and very aggressive at the sheer mention of somebody threatening his daughter?
Yeah, he's playing Papa Bear all the way here. Like, do not touch my daughter. What's interesting about that, though, is Gaia and Talos don't seem as close as Gaia and her mother do, right? As we've seen in earlier episodes, it seems like, not that she has super resentment to her father, but like they weren't just as close as it feels like they should be. Because when they're meeting, you're like, why is this? What is this tension? I feel like this should be more loving. Hey, dad, how you doing? And it's not like that at all. But it also feels like Talos does feel like maybe he dropped the ball somewhere in terms of where Gaia is. The fact that Gaia is with Gravik at all, I think is a pressure point for him. Even the concept that when all this is going down, Talos has to say, okay, we got Gaia back. You know what I mean? He has to go through and say that, which again in my mind is like, man, y'all lost her. Gaia was legit with the people. She was not for y'all. And it wasn't until Talos again made that call that it seemed like she kind of came back to Earth and talked to her and feel like she kind of came back to Earth. And so I think there's something in Talos, man, that's just like he very much regrets and has some regret towards the way he's treated his daughter over the years, or didn't keep her close enough to the chest as he wanted to. And so I think there's some anger there. It's like, don't talk about my daughter because you don't know Dude, yeah, I just think he really loves her like any other dad does. I do. I just think he loves her, and he doesn't want to see her get hurt in any way. So it's like, don't talk about her, because it's his protection mechanism. That's all he can really do in those moments is for them not to talk about her. So yeah, I will see what's about to go down. Now I think Talos is about to go off the hinges. But yeah, it makes sense though, and like you said, I love how he's not threatened by Gravik in that moment, because Gravik's like, look, I got people by me. He said, oh, you didn't know this room is full of scrolls. But Talos doesn't care, and I love it's something about that commander in him though, where Talos has a sense of fearlessness about him, and I think he's just using that to protect the people that he loves. So yeah, we'll see where it goes, man.
Yeah, we're seeing the boiling points for multiple characters all reach their crescendo essentially at the same time. Gravik has had enough, and this is why he's doing what he's doing. But equally as much, Talos has kind of had enough with the circumstances and the situation he's dealt with. And so we're seeing him become very aggressive, very resentful towards Fury, as we noted last week and continued on in this week. And just the whole relationship with his daughter, which you can just imagine has been super complicated all these years, and the death of the mother had to create a strain between them and just put them in a place that's not all that great. But they obviously still love each other because she's also still helping Talos and acting as a double agent and giving him information that's really key and pertinent to all these different missions. And so that stuff is just like him still realizing how deeply his love goes for his daughter, and also realizing that tensions are super high and that any wrong misstep can mean her life, can mean anybody's life really in this larger fight that's happening right now. And so he's just not playing around. He's not having that shit anymore. And his people have suffered so much, and it's affected his family in numerous ways. And now that's just become a thing where he has a actual figurehead and a physical manifestation for where he can direct his own anger. And that is Gravik, because Gravik is obviously taking the fight directly to him. And so all of that stuff is just boiling over. Like, tensions are super high for everybody right now. And so you're experiencing life or death situations. And that is one of the aspects that I do like about this series, is that just out of nowhere, somebody can just like get off quickly and can just die. You know, there is this whole sort of Royal Navy submarine plot. I'm not all that interested in talking about that, but when Fury and Talos get together to go find the Commodore to essentially abort the mission, again, at the mention of his daughter being a quote unquote traitor, Talos just shoots him right in the fucking sternum, and that's it. You know, there's no questions asked. It's just it's like that for you if you go to that length to talk about my daughter. And he probably would do the same to Gravik if he had the capacity to do so. But we know Gravik is obviously a lot more powerful and not just necessarily a regular scroll now. But I do want to talk about Fury and Talos, which we caught up a lot with their relationship last week. They had a really, really important conversation on that train, which we talked a lot about. And that sort of continued on in this week's episode. Again, I'm not really that interested in this Royal Navy plot. It was just like a device to move the story along, and it was just an attack that was happening. But really, underneath all of that, we got time to just understand more of their relationship and more of why things have sort of broken down between these two. And there were a couple of key moments where Talos is eating in a diner and Fury shows up like, hey, I need your help. Yeah. Talos is toying with him like, yeah, tell me you need my help. Like, actually admit it and say it out loud. Fury does so. He acquiesces to that. But then they have a more important conversation in the car ride on the way to the Commodore's headquarters, where we basically just get to see Talos once again sort of let loose and say, look, Fury, you asked us for your help, for our help, as Skrulls. And all these years, we have delivered time and time again. We gave you all important information. We gave you intel. And every time you received a promotion is because we were right there along your side working in secrecy to help you advance within S.H.I.E.L.D. You are who you are because of the work that we put in. And I think even the more important thing that he says at the end of it is that I was happy to do it. I didn't have a problem with doing it. But don't try to rewrite history as if I wasn't there the entire time, as if you just created this all on your own. So what did you think about just understanding and getting to know Talos's point of view even more, and having him really illuminate how Fury became the big boss that he was, the fact that he became the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. really because the Skrulls were there all along helping him advance all throughout his career?
Man, what a all these three episodes are still like the metaphor of bringing Nick Fury down to earth, man. Literally from scene one, he's literally coming down to earth. Everybody is trying to bring this man back down to earth. And Talos, I think, is doing, of course, the best job at it, right? Maria Hill could only say so much. Sonya could only say so much. His wife is, I think, trying to do a decent job of, like, bringing him back down to earth. But Talos is definitely doing the best job because even though their relationship is weird, Talos definitely seems like Nick Fury's best friend, if you can call him that. You know what I mean? And so they're able to have these nitty-gritty conversations. And it feels like Talos is the one getting to him the most, especially starting in the diner. He told him, tell me that you need help. Stop with the bull. You're going to have to start using your words. And I love when he says that. Use your words. Because there are things that Nick Fury does by way of manipulation where he never has to use his words. He'll use a tactic. He'll use somebody else. He just will not use his words. The same way you were talking about the way we brought the Avengers together. He had to use a tactic.
Bloody Captain America
card. Bloody Captain American card. That is not him using his words. But what's so interesting about Nick Fury is almost every time he has called for help has been something like that. It has been an event that brought people together. It has been a pager of calling Captain Marvel. You know what I'm saying? It's never like, hello, how you doing? I need you here right now. Come help me. And I love how Talos makes him have this come to Jesus moment. It's like, this time, if you need help, you need to say something. So I really love that moment in the diner as well. But when we get to the car scene, he's breaking it down to him, man. And I think there's no way for Nick Fury to argue against anything Talos is saying. One of my favorite parts that Talos even says is that I didn't even need an apology or something like that. He was like, I didn't even need a bunch of recognition or anything that we've been helping you. All I'm asking for, like you said, is for you not to rewrite history and pretend like I wasn't here. Give me the credit. That's all I'm asking for. Don't pretend like I wasn't here the whole time. And so I love how, again, everybody's just knocking Nick Fury down little by little, because I think in the long run, I think it'll help him. But it's interesting for the protagonist, for us to kind of be thinking like that, right? Even in my mind, I'm like, yeah, he needs this. And I think that is a good way to write dialogue and plot, is to be like, yeah, the main character here needs some coming to Jesus moments. And I think Talos is providing that for him. But I love how he's able to say that to him. I love how the tension is in the car when he's saying it, because I don't know. It felt like before, like Nick Fury just felt right about things. You know, it was like Nick Fury knows exactly what he's doing. In here, you could tell it's like, bro, you still kind of don't know what's going on, or you're still not giving people that deserve due. You're still not making them due. And so it's been an interesting ride. One other thing I'll add. I think these conversations add to Captain Marvel a little bit. Like when you see Talos, you know what I mean? It's like, huh, that's where this is going. I wish we could see like some of the in-betweens of you know, the missions that they carried out. But it's like, huh, I see how this relationship kind of manifested. So, yeah, I like these. That car scene was probably my favorite of the episode. Something about these small character moments, man, that I really like. But, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
The character moments really drive the story. It's always the action bullshit that gets in the way, because on the way to like having this conversation, it's like, yeah, there's a submarine launch that's about to take place. And so we have to stop this commander from, you know, launching the codes or whatever. And I'm like, can we just like stick with the conversation? Like that stuff is really, really good, 'cause like I care about these people. But be that as it may, I think that that whole element of Nick Fury as a character and as a prominent figurehead all throughout the MCU is just really interesting to examine, because he has built up this mystique to him for such a long time. He's built up this invisible sort of barrier around him where you can't really touch him. Not many people have access to him. And if you do, then you're probably going to be working at his behalf. You're not necessarily going to be working with him. It's because Fury has always had enough power and enough pull to basically take the soldiers and put them out on the battlefield as need be. We've seen that countless time over and over, whether it was the Avengers or Spider-Man or Captain Marvel. He's always had people working on his behalf for the greater, I guess, good, if you want to look at it from that perspective. But now Fury having to reckon with his own choices and having to reckon with his own mortality, has to realize that, yeah, you were smart and intelligent. You've always been a very, very smart guy, but you've never done any of this stuff by yourself. Like, it's never, ever happened that way. Not even from the beginning, because Talos even told him, like, you were a bench warmer at best when we met. Like, you weren't the guy who you thought you were. Like, you were just kind of making it day by day. You became the guy because you had 19 of us working for you. And when you have 19, for lack of a better term, soldiers that are out in the field doing the dirty work, finding the intel, reporting back, that probably makes your life a hell of a lot easier instead of you having to go out there and do it yourself. And so he can sort of fall to the background, have them working on his behalf. He reaps all the benefits because they can't even reveal who they are. They have to work and operate in secrecy. But Fury, all along the way, getting promotions, getting new titles, getting more power, becoming a world super leader, essentially. And so it kind of fucked up because for 30 years now, Talos, his family, all those other Skrulls, they just have not been able to live in any sort of level of comfort. And so when you start to think of it that way and you start to go back to Gravik and how he feels and Priscilla and the way that she feels, it's like you can't really fault these people. You can't necessarily say that they're coming out of places that are unfounded or based on anything that's untrue. Now, how they choose to direct their energy now, that certainly is still well within their power and they shouldn't be killing thousands of people. I don't think anybody will deny or debate that. But still, at the same time, people are fed the fuck up with how things have been treated for them for all these years. And Fury has been largely responsible for a lot of that stuff. And so I love that we're playing and toying with the line of who's a hero. What does it mean to be a hero? What does any of that shit actually mean in this day and age? And when the MCU can really dive into that stuff, which they've been able to do, especially with some of these series, that makes it all the more interesting. And I love when we can tackle that type of material. The end of this episode has two key things that happen. Gaia essentially gets outed as a double agent, Talos, because of her relationship with Talos and her feeding him information. Gravik is able to eventually put the puzzle pieces together. And we see that towards the end of this episode, she gets pretty much intercepted by Gravik as she tries to escape. And he holds her at gunpoint. And before she's able to give off this really meaningful monologue or say something super profound to him, he shoots her. He just goes ahead and just shoots her cold, point blank, period. Mm. And we know that with Skrulls, when they become severely injured or when they die, if they're in their human form, they revert back to their original Skrull form. That's typically a key indicator that they are dead. And that's what happens to Gaia at the end of this episode. We see a bullet definitely penetrate her chest, and she reverts back to her Skrull form. But there's still, I think, some lingering questions as to whether or not she's actually dead or if it's just like a fake out, if she pretended to be dead. What say you in that situation? Because it's a little ambiguous. Again, intentionally, this is a spy espionage show, so they're just always going to have these sort of cliffhangers. But what do you think about that? Do you think that she's actually gone? And if so, does this feel like that they're fridging another female character basically to further the plot line of a male character in the show? Because if she's gone, this is kind of like the second or third time that this might have happened, because Maria Hill, you know, is one of those other characters that her going away is essentially to further the plot line of Nick Fury, which, you know, you can look at that in a negative way if you choose to. Do you think that that might be the case here, or is it possible that she's like faking out her own death and we'll see her come back in some form or fashion in the next few episodes?
You know, Gaia even took a pretty big backseat in this episode in general. And it's like, oh, shoot, is she dead? Like, what happened? Where is Emilia Clarke? When I seen it, I think this could be delusion, but I just don't think she's dead, especially after she did all the research about Super Skrulls. I have a feeling at some point she injected herself whatever she needed to become a Super Skrull, and I don't think Gravik knew that, and I think he shot her, and like you said, I think she kind of played dead. But I feel like part of the Super Skrulls, something they're going to have, is this regenerative healing quality to them, I think, is what might be it. And so I don't think she's dead. Like you said, there's no way they're going to do this twice. And there's no way they're going to put Emilia Clarke in this episode or in this TV show for three episodes. I just don't have a feeling that's how it's going to go. So we'll see, man. But that is my weird prediction, I guess, is that Gaia found a way to inject herself with the whatever serum they're using for to make these super scrolls, and she played dead when Graphic shot her. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a catch 22. If she's not dead, then you start to question the stakes and the meaningful nature of any of this stuff. Like, who is actually dead? Because why show somebody get shot dead in the chest and then, you know, all of a sudden they like are okay the next episode? You would start to just like question the verisimilitude of everything that you're seeing, which is a very precarious line to walk. But then on the other side, as I just noted, she is a female character. We've already seen Maria Hill go. Maria Hill died, really, to just further the plot line of Nick Fury. I know a lot of people were upset at that because it's like, again, that whole element of fridging. And so, like, we're going to do that to another female character just because of Talos. You don't want to walk that line either. And it's Emilia Clarke. Why not use her more if you have her? Mm-hmm. There's multiple ways to look at it. Ultimately, I don't think she's dead if I had to lean one way or another. I think that there's also been other footage that we've seen her in. If you look at like some of the trailers, I think there's other shots that we have not seen thus far that she would appear in. That could just be a misdirect. They've done that before, so that wouldn't be unusual per se. But I just have a feeling that she will stick around and that there's some sort of like workaround to keep her alive, because there have been at least a couple of deaths so far that would throw you off of your equilibrium to say like, oh, well, you never know who might make it out alive from this show, because people are dying literally every episode. Like, we're just seeing people get offed. Some of them a lot more insignificant than others. But I think that they're also sort of playing with those expectations of like, you just don't know who might survive Secret Invasion. That's the point of the stakes.
That's true.
Entirely, you know. And so it could be a game that they're masterfully playing. But again, you have to be careful just with these really, really important characters, or at least these characters that you want us to feel are important. The other second big thing that happened is at the end of this episode, we go back to Priscilla. She essentially takes a key out of her house to go to a safety deposit box at the bank to retrieve a gun. She retrieves a weapon and she gets a call, probably a follow-up call from the earlier moment in this episode. And the call, if you watch the episode with subtitles, it just says man on phone, but it clearly sounds
very
like Rhodey.
Very clearly
sounds like him, and it's Don Cheadle's voice. But I don't know why they inserted that man on phone subtitle. Maybe it's to make us question and wonder if it's actually Rhodey, if it's somebody impersonating Rhodey as a Skrull. We just don't entirely know. So there's a couple of ways to look at it. What is she about to do? Because she asks to speak to Gravik, which again alludes to the fact that they probably have some sort of relationship and some sort of contact with each other, that she's requesting to speak to him. The person on the other line of the phone, who sounds like Rhodey, is like, well, you got me. This is who you're talking to. So does this then reveal that Rhodey is actually a Skrull, which we started to speculate about last week? Is Rhodey working on behalf of Gravik, in essence, you know, working as sort of a lieutenant for him? Is Priscilla also working on behalf of Gravik, and so she's deciding to take matters into her own hands, and she's fed up with it? Is she taking the gun to just go kill him herself because she's like, you know what, this has gone too far? A lot of lingering questions, a lot of stuff that we still have to sit by and wait for the answers on. But how did you feel about seeing that scene play out? And what do you think it'll ultimately, you know, sort of entail for the next few episodes?
Man, so many questions being raised in so little time. I'm not sure what's happening, man. I really don't. After seeing Talos in the exact same episode use his voice to stop the launch, you're like, okay, man on phone? Because I was watching with subtitles just as well. It's like, but that's very clearly Rhodey. So like, why are we saying, man? I just don't know, man. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing that I don't know. I kind of like the mystery there a little bit, to question what's happening with Rhodey. What if this whole time we thought we're questioning whether Rhodey is a Skrull? But what if Rhodey's locked up somewhere and somebody just impersonating him to be a Skrull? You know what I'm saying? There's so many questions and things that could be happening here. I think I like the episode ending like that, because it went from making, I think, Priscilla, I think, like, a, I don't know, she was a very minor player in the story, and they turned her all the way up by the end of this episode. Her going into the lockbox and opening it as a gun, this is turning into a scandal. Like, what? What's happening? Like, she's supposed to go shoot somebody? What is going on? I don't mind a lot of questions being raised like that, because to me, it's like, oh, that's a pretty good cliffhanger. You know what I'm saying? But I think again, it's the grand scheme of how much time we have left is scaring me, man. It just really, that's really what it is. It's like, I love these questions, but three episodes is either some things aren't going to be answered or we're going to get to the answer too fast. And it's going to make me mad because it was shortchanged and the story wasn't as in-depth as it could have been. And so, yeah, it's a really mixed bag for me, I think, by that way. But I think, again, I still enjoyed the questions. It's like, is Rhodey and Gravik, Priscilla and Gravik, Priscilla and it's a lot there. And so I am pretty excited. It did make me go, okay, next episode, I do need to know what's going on here. And I didn't necessarily get that 100%, like you said, from the first episode. Like, oh, I do need to know what's happening. And it's like, no, this is like some interesting stuff. So it really just depends on where the energy lies. But I think it's a good setup to what the next episode has the potential to be.
Certainly. I think Priscilla and her fate and ultimately where she falls in this whole conflict is a little less serious, I think, to the grand scheme of things than Rhodey, because Priscilla is like a new character for the show. And so that relationship isn't as well established as Rhodey, who, on the other hand, we've been following for nearly 15 years now as a character. And so if we're deciding to finally say that Rhodey has been a Skrull for either all of this time or some amount of time, all of that stuff needs clarity. It's definitely going to have to be a very careful dance that they have with that character, because it's going to make us reshape and rethink about everything that's happened with him all the way up until this point. Because was he a Skrull when we first saw him in those first couple of Iron Man movies? Did it happen at some point along the way? Like you said, maybe he got kidnapped and somebody's just impersonating him, because you can even look back to certain moments where he's been damaged in battle and his form never changed. You know, his form never actually reverted back to being a Skrull. Civil War, like, my guy almost died. He pretty much became paralyzed. And so he probably wasn't a Skrull then. So when did it happen, if there has been a switch? You know, what is that point in the timeline, and what does that look like? And also, I think if it does happen after that moment, then what has been the play for the particular character since then? Has it been just like to infiltrate the Avengers and to get intel and information to aid in this whole rebellion? Is he working on behalf of Gravik? Is it to secretly still work on behalf of Nick Fury and Talos and be one of the quote unquote good Skrulls, you know, fighting in the battle? A lot of questions there that they certainly have to answer, because they know that everybody's asking about Rhodey. You have to be asking about Rhodey, because he's clearly the most obvious Avenger who would have been a Skrull for an extended amount of time throughout the story thus far. And so I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued, to say the least, because if they do it well, it can be interesting. But if they don't, then we're looking at a situation that's going to, you know, have us just looking at the whole MCU like, wait, that doesn't really make sense and it doesn't add up. So we'll certainly have to see. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on episode 3 of the Marvel Studios original series, Secret Invasion. If you've checked out this latest episode, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's all we have for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you again for tuning into another podcast. We will, of course, be back to talk about next week's episode of Secret Invasion, episode 4. We'll be back to review and recap that episode. And we'll, of course, have our regular episode to review all the latest and greatest in the world of pop culture and entertainment. So plenty to look forward to. But until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Two Black Jedi and Two Black Sith collection at twoblacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy.
And we out, y'all. Peace. I was trying to strike shit like a match late night, strike like I missed it, strike like I hit the pin, strike like I'm not